I'm going to just give you a brief overview of what is Los Alamos, and again, we're delighted to have this group here. It's an unusual group for us to have at the lab, but as you'll see, there's an intersection with a lot of what we do in the biosciences. So Los Alamos just celebrated our 70th year last year, and we plan on another 70 years. We are the largest and oldest national laboratory in the country, and we're charged with sustaining the scientific capability for national security for the nation, looking out a decade and beyond. And so we maintain a diversity of programs and scientific work here that's surprising to most people. You're going to get a deeper dive into our bioscience. We just went through a strategic planning exercise, so I can channel for the director on this. A very crisp statement of our mission is to solve national security challenges with scientific excellence. So each word in that is important. We solve, we don't just study. We'd like to get things out that work across the board. We do focus on national security, but that's surprisingly broad. That includes energy security, it includes food security, it touches on certainly economic security. Our core mission is to maintain the safety and security of the nuclear stockpile, and that requires a breadth of scientific talent that then we harness to serve other national missions as they evolve. Over time, as the national priorities change, so does the budget and priorities of the laboratory. There was a time in the 70s when the majority of the work done here was related to energy. Of course, post 9/11, there was a big focus on counterterrorism that continues to this day. And the idea is we don't ever know what's going to happen 5 or 10 years from now. And the scientific talent at the laboratory is really unique in the nation. If you lose that, it's really hard to put it back together. So part of what we try to do is knit together a very diverse set of programs that sustains the technical staff at the lab so that we're here when the nation needs us. So we think about our science across what we call pillars, scientific pillars. This is the stuff we have to be great at. Whatever the blend of national missions is. The first of those is, in no particular order, we have four pillars, but nuclear and particle futures, you would expect that we're, nuclear is fundamental to almost everything we do. But at the core in nuclear science leads to a surprising diversity, and one of those areas is in plant science. Pat is a great example. We were, over the last 70 years, the world leaders in understanding the flow of isotopes through the ecosystem, starting with radiation health effects, but then going to things like tracking treaty verifications, understanding if other people are doing tests by where do radioisotopes go. And as part of that, then we developed here a stable isotope program, which is to use stable isotopes, primarily carbon, oxygen, and nitrogen, and to use those to track plant metabolism, and then also to manufacture a very wide range of chemical compounds that are used in all kinds of different things, and to be able to discriminate naturally occurring versus artificially manufactured chemicals. And so there's a thread there that leads back to bioscience. The nuclear and particle futures, particle physics has been fundamental to understanding the atom. A lot of what we do involves neutron science, gamma ray detection. We sustain the treaty verification capability for nuclear detection monitoring from space, from seismology, and air monitoring. If you take the instruments that are on space to look for gamma rays coming down and you point them out, then you get the signatures of black holes and gamma ray events that are fundamental to understanding the universe. So we have a very strong cosmology effort as a result of that. The information science and technology is a lot of people think of IT as computers. We think of it as essentially the we need high-performance computers in order to enable the types of scientific calculations that we do. That implies a depth of scientific coding expertise. How do you put scientific problems onto these computers at scale? And then this whole area of modeling and simulation, which is now fundamental to how the scientific method works. In most areas now, the amount of data that that is available on a problem far exceeds the amount of that you can integrate just via experiment and theory. So when we all went to graduate school, you could be an experimentalist or a theorist. And now there's a third leg of that stool, which is modeling and simulation. So most scientific problems involve formulating a model that captures as much of the physical world as you can, and then testing that in a very targeted way with controlled experiments, and then running the models as a way to inform your intuition on the scientific problem. So that complex modeling and simulation is fundamental to how we verify the performance of the nuclear stockpile in the absence of nuclear testing. It's also fundamental to things like climate models. We maintain 2 of the 4 climate models for the country, for the world community at UCC, in ocean circulation and sea ice. And so that's in many cases, as the last Secretary of Energy liked to say, you can only do one experiment in climate, for example. That's the one we're doing today. And sort of to test the limits of the system, often you have to do that in models. And we also look at very large volumes of data, so data science at scale. And that leads us into this other area we call science of signatures. So how do you get insight from very large amounts of data, or other sort of looking not just for the needle in the haystack, but understanding which parts of the needle to reassemble within that. So, again, that started with isotopic tracing, but it's extended very broadly. Now, a lot of the biggest problems are in data science, things like looking for data in social networks, in cybersecurity, looking for chemical signatures or biological signatures. And so again, tracing back to the stable isotope work, that was originally looking for traversal of radioisotopes in the ecosystem. That leads more broadly to lots of different types of sensors, not just nuclear sensors, but video, other space-based sensors. You may have seen the press on the ChemCam that's on the Mars rover. That's a laser-induced breakdown spectroscopy sensor that allows you to look at rocks from a distance. And that's how we're able to prove that there was water on Mars, and more specifically where water flowed and what the geochemistry of that was. So that's been a great scientific boon for the nation. We just learned last month that the next version of the Mars rover will have an enhanced version of that that has not only the laser spectroscopy but the raw mass spectrometer. The other area is in materials, called materials for the future, looking at performance of materials and predicting materials that we haven't yet invented. And then the performance in extreme conditions, such as temperature, radiation, pressure, fundamentally tracking back to the stockpile. How do we predict the aging of the stockpile, not knowing what's going to happen and not being able to test the fully assembled systems? But we do a lot of other areas of material science, the high-temperature superconductivity, and a lot of the technology for that emerged out of the laboratory. And for us, it's really about understanding at a intermediate scale, a nanometer scale, the performance of defects and interfaces in complex materials, oxides, nitrides, everything high on the periodic chart, and then performance not just in things like explosive materials, but also electronic and magnetic-based materials. So I want to just come back at the end to a lot of people ask, why do we do biology at the lab? Biology is fundamental to the science of this century. I think you all understand that. the extension from genomics to metagenomics and its impact on everything from food productivity to the microbiome, very much an emerging field. We've just scratched the surface. Biology is at the interface of many different disciplines today, so bioengineering, biomaterials, bioinformatics. And so it's driving frontier issues for the laboratory that we just have to be we have to be part of that active frontier. It's also fundamental to our mission. It's a very sobering reminder right now of the Ebola crisis that's going on in Africa. The threats that are evolving that could be either natural or man-made, we really don't have control of the bio threat at this point. And bio threats are one of those areas where 100,000 people can be impacted rather quickly. So we do a lot of work on the national security front for understanding emerging pathogens, predicting the course of potential pathogenic or epidemic diseases, and then in designing medical countermeasures. All of that work then feeds back into our mission-driven work on bioenergy. It's a very hot topic right now in the DOE, and you're going to see one of the facilities on that. And again, it allows our staff to stay at the leading edge in areas like plant physiology and food production. So that's kind of a real fast sweep over the lab. Any quick questions? I'm going to hand it over to Dave.
I just have a quick question. So when you're talking about like the pathogens, that's somewhat interesting.
Yeah.
So do you work closely with like the center, you know, CDD and some of those places as well?
Yes.
Okay.
So one of the tools that we've developed here was based on our modeling and simulation. This is one of the experiments you really don't want to do. is testing the spread of a potential pathogen through cities, through transmission. So we have a tool called EpiSims simulation that the CDC calls on. So we're actively involved right now in trying to understand what are potential risk pathways, for example, for Ebola, if it thankfully it is not transmitted through the air, but what if it was, what other intervention mechanisms. We were part of the decision back when the swine flu came through not to close the borders with Mexico.
Okay.
It assessed that it had already come across. All you were going to do by closing the borders is a lot of economic damage.
Okay.
So that we are called on in national emergencies to inform decisions in time of crisis.